12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Brave the dark woods of folk horror with us in this Vaesen actual play, The Hidden North. Remember, 12-sided stories are always story-heavy, rules-light, and full of fright.
Hello, and welcome to The Hidden North, episode number 9. My name is Wes Otis. This is our Vaesen actual play. Let's start with Candace.
Hello, everyone. My name is Candace, also known as Candace the Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and I am here today playing the Doctor, Hildegard Brunson. Also they, she. Fully sus right now, just extremely suspicious, but also really excited to dive into this body.
Hey, I'm Michelle, and I am playing Greta, your local academic, and just looking to find out some answers to these mysteries. I'm telling you.
Hello, I'm Saint or Saint Spider, and I am playing Steve, our occultist, who didn't really plan the whole thing about exploring the dead body together, but my God, I guess she's committed. So hand me some of that salve up my nose right now. Both she and I use she, her pronouns.
Hi, everyone. I am Piper. I use they, them pronouns, and I am playing Elizabeth Purse, who uses she, they pronouns. Elizabeth is a writer and also does not trust the church at all, nor Lucy.
Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon, support the podcast, and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
This is a great place for a recap. In the last episode, you all saved a sparrow together. Actually, Hildegard and Steve saved the sparrow by working on it very quickly in the library for your brownie friend. You also found out your brownie friend's name, which is Ralkin. Ralkin said that he was told he was not allowed to help you and you should not gain access to the library, but he seemed more pissed off than he did concerned about letting you in the library. As you were there, Hildegard tried to make contact with the fairies, but they were being a bit aloof, but she knows that they heard them say the words. Right then, as all that was happening, a new group of people for the society showed up. They had gotten letters, went to the asylum and all of that. They introduced themselves. One of them was Colin, an older man with a obvious, like, shorter right leg and a cane and a huge raven on his shoulder. And then there was Idvilka, who is Russian, much like Hildegard, kind of a refrigerator femme with scars all over her body. Looks like she's been in quite a few fights. Then there was Eric, a very beautiful man in probably 18, 19 years old with very curly red hair, some freckles that are all like they were painted on by God. Then there was Amy, a younger American girl, light brown skin, straight black hair. She had a rosary in her pocket that you noticed. It was green with, you figured, glass, a glass rosary. You snuck into Lucy's bedroom while Lucy was showing these new people to their rooms, and you found a very stripped down area, and she had a little journal where she was talking about the notes and the people that she was meeting, and also secret passages from the castle to outside and from the kitchen, the servants' quarters, up to the second floor. It made you wonder if there were more places that had secret passages that you didn't know about or not. Maybe Lucy hasn't found everything. You then secured the ones that went outside. One went to the garden. One went to an alleyway in the middle of the city, which was very long. You made it so you could get through because you know the secret handshake and you can open up the thing really easily. But if someone else tried to go through, they're not part of the club and can't open the door. After doing all that, you then made your way to the police station and you found that over 34 babies have been kidnapped. 15 younger women have been kidnapped, about the age that you would need to be a wet nurse. And the police officer that you had met at the cabin told you about the fact that all these people are missing. Mother Superior came by and was very upset that the babies were going missing. Didn't really mention the women, which made you sus, I guess made you suspect something. And told you about a grisly murder where a guy was nailed to a wall underneath his throat, threw his spinal cord into the wall and hung there. And the reason I'm telling you that again is because I think it's kind of cool. And his body is downstairs in their basically makeshift morgue. They don't have a big hospital with a morgue or anything. They have an asylum for some reason, but no big hospital. So they have doctors that go out and do house calls and things like that. Hildegard told the police officer if they needed any help to come find them. He warned you about being outsiders and being part of Gillenkreutz and the fact that all these missing people are starting to get the locals upset and to be careful. He told you about Mother Superior as well. That's where we ended it because you all were going to split up, which is my favorite thing. Two of you, I believe Hildegard and Siv, are going down to check out the corpse. And the other two of you were going where again, Greta and Elizabeth?
We were going to go visit Linnea to see if she sent these other four people and if she knows who the hell Sister Lucy is.
I do think that she did mention to you that she sent Sister Lucy over there.
Oh, okay. So I thought Sister Lucy had mentioned that she was sent by Linnea, but I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong.
I think they both, you're right, technically, they just both confirmed the other.
They both confirmed the other thing. Now, remember, Linnea is not completely mentally healthy all the time, so sometimes that can lead to confusion and things like that. It's a good thing to just kind of remember when you're dealing with her, is her information might be kerfluffled. I like using that word, and I try to use it as much as possible. Let's start with Hildegard and Siv. You go down into this room. It's underneath the police station. It is relatively cool down here. It's almost like a root cellar kind of situation where it's been dug out and they've got beams and stuff. And there are a couple of boxes that are slid into the wall. There is a stainless steel table. They put this guy on there. You can still see there's a lot of blood around the neck because the white sheet that they put over him is just completely saturated. Next to the body is the actual spike that was in his throat. What do you guys want to do? Do you want to make a medicine roll? You can make a couple different rolls and then help each other out and get bonuses for it if you'd like. How do you want to proceed?
First of all, are there other bodies down here or just one?
Just the one.
Okay, so Siv is absolutely walking behind Hildegard, mashing her amazingly powerful gait, and is still slathering the salve, because though I have also seen dead bodies, I don't like to frolic with them too much. So
listen, try it before you knock it, okay? Like, you
know. Listen, there's a lot of vampires out there that like to frolic, and they're dead. So
that's all I'm saying. I mean, give them a chance.
Yeah, I just gotta take baby steps. So,
baby steps are exactly what Siv is taking next to Hildegard's race.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm looking to her lead, but I am definitely ready to observe. Roll and observe.
Hildegard is trying to be mindful of how fast they're walking and how excited they are. This is like the first thing that they actually feel they might be able to help with a real way. Plus, they love a good mystery. Plus, bodies. It takes like a really seriously gross body to upset her. And she's always looking for the edge, right? Like they're always out there like looking to test their stomach and the strength of their fortitude.
So you're saying you're a gore hound?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think like she also kind of gains a lot of sexual power and energy after these moments, almost like facing death. They face death and they look it in the face and then they walk away. And there's a lot of power that they feel. So she's really trying to keep her steps very measured, even though she's still walking pretty fast because, like, they're really excited.
Okay, well, I tell you what. Just roll just straight up logic for me. to see if you can keep yourself composed and try to keep any unnatural feelings to the side.
But she's gonna, because I definitely failed my role.
Yeah, so you're trying really hard, but you're a little too giddy, even for, I mean, a giddy refrigerator femme is always a question mark. It's like, what's going on here? You have a little bit of a light step, and you're feeling a little euphoric. You pull back the sheet in a very grandiose motion. Basically, what has happened is that the neck is about 2 times longer than it should be because the weight of the body and the gravity slowly separated the two. And the spinal cord, you can see space between the discs, and its mouth is still open. But all of that doesn't bother you. What really makes your heart flutter is how sinewy this man is and how perfectly proportioned everything is on him. He is not slightly asymmetrical. He is perfectly symmetrical, even though his head's quite far away from his body. Steve, I need you to make a fear check because she just walked over, threw this thing off. It was all very sudden and she seems giddy and it's kind of creeping you out a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Does that mean that Steve doesn't get an extra die for my presence?
Nope, she doesn't.
Sorry.
It's a -1 for the freakiness.
No minus one, but you don't get the bonus.
Spooky friend alert. Spooky friend alert.
Ooh, but I have one success.
Okay, so you're fine.
Because you know I'm so nice is what it is, you know?
Steve's like, and that sheet gets thrown back. She does a little half skip backwards, like, whoa, watch out now. Okay, and perhaps notices that a little bit of viscera comes off with the strength of the whip of the sheet. And kind of, she's just, all right. Hildegard is very strong and a little scary, but this is not new information. So I am observing you right now.
I don't think Hildegard realizes that they're being observed. They are very focused. You see her eyes soften looking at the corpse, and they take a look at this person very slowly from like the top of their head to their feet, kind of going like inch by inch, almost like they're recording this image to memory. And when they finish that first visual catalog, her eyes revert back to that more shrewd look that she has, but with a fire behind them. And they get very close. You see them take a small set of glasses out of their inner breast pocket and put them on. They have magnifying capabilities. And she takes out a few different tools from their case that they always have. They always have like a little bag with them. There's these pliers. They look almost like they have little prongs at the ends of the scissor apparatus to hold things open, like clamps. And like their fingers like run very gently from the underneath of this person's chin to the hole in their neck and kind of graze the outside of it before kind of tenderly putting the clamp inside and opening it up and trying to look for any kind of clues or remnants of iron or something like that, like maybe to figure out the material that was used to do this. And yeah, then they start their autopsy.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to get to something I want Steve to do in a second, but first let's get the medical roll out of the way. I will say because Steve made her fear check that she can assist if she so wants to and give you an extra die.
Yes. After observing this kind of tender moment with the body, but it was a bit of recognition of this is her zone. And I don't need to be so skittish, and it's kind of intriguing. And so Steve is, well, there's no gloves, but she shakes her hands or rubs it on her shirt, I guess, a bit. And
yeah, you wouldn't have thought of germs at all. You would have been like, yeah.
Be like, well, is there debris and leaves on me? Let me just shake that off. And if I can be of any assistance, I'm here.
Hildegard's head snaps toward you. They'll peer at you because they're kind of crouched. So they're closer to your level and they'll peer at you above these glasses as if they didn't realize you were standing there.
Oh, yeah. Are you sure you have the stomach for it?
No, but I am here. So let's see if I make it.
Okay.
You hear like a little bit of like a shuffle. And when you look down, you can see that they've used their booted foot to like, move the trash can closer to you.
if you need to, how do you say, get sick, you need to do so and not on the body. We treat the body with respect. This person had a life, and we need to honor that, yes?
Yes, understood. I would also would not like it if someone threw up on my corpse. Mm. After seeing a couple versions of it, too, it's even more real to imagine that.
Is that good?
Yeah. Okay, I'm ready.
Seems like the bare minimum to ask people. Please don't throw up on my corpse.
Let's not
throw up on my corpse.
So I imagine this has already been looked over once?
You don't know.
Like, are there stitches, like someone's like opened them up or anything?
No.
Okay, I just start doing like a full autopsy. I start with the throat wound and I start kind of writing down notes and things like that. I try to see like how the blood looks. Is there anything unusual about this considering how symmetrical he is? That's not something that I think I commonly see.
Go ahead and give me your medical roll first. He is very symmetrical.
Like, is it perfectly symmetrical in a somebody made this man kind of way? Or is it perfectly symmetrical like he's just really handsome?
Because he's dead, he's even more handsome to you.
Okay, got it. So then I'm not going to look for that because I know it.
Okay. Yeah.
What the heck, man?
Did you get no?
Wait, 2, 4, 6, 7. I have one extra die that I can use.
Oh, I got a 6.
All right. Everything's fine. Everything's good.
I'm helpful.
A couple things that you notice. Number one, he's not human. Number two, the spike that was used to nail him to the wall is made out of iron. So that's the thing Steve notices. And you notice that, hey, wait a minute. This could be a full adult changeling child. You know, someone who grew up completely and was just, you have no clue. This one's weird. Also, the spike has kind of a biblical feel to it. It's a big, long 7-inch spike made out of iron, you know, and he got nailed to a wall. It's very Roman. I'll put it that way.
I think seeing that this person is actually a Vazen gives her pause. The eyes soften again and she strokes his cheek.
I have bad news. This is not a human. This is Vazen. This is a fairy.
Steve is looking now into the open chest cavity. And since I also am recognizing not human, am I able to recognize perhaps, oh, that's a changeling gallbladder or, you know, something like that?
Pretty much, yeah. You can tell, especially just with your studies and your own dealings, that, yeah, you notice that these are definitely just off. The coloration's off. The location's off. It's like a 6-chamber heart that's like near the stomach instead of up in the chest. The lung is, instead of 2 lungs that are normal, it's 1 big lung in the center that looks like a big sponge in the chest. It's definitely different from human.
But I don't know exactly what.
No, you'd have to go and do some research to do that, which is something you can do later on. But right now in the basement, you know it's different. You know it's changeling. I will give you this, though. You do find a couple, or at least Hildegard pulls out a couple of fine vines and sticks out of the bodies in places. So you remember I told you that when they do the changelings, usually what happens is they'll put those stick effigies in the house and then over a short amount of time, they fill in with flesh. So this thing only has some bones. It has a spinal column, but most of the rest of it has hard wood that is keeping it together, almost like a web of vines that is grown within the flesh.
Steve looks and reaches to confirm with her hand as well that these are wooden, essentially, bones and framework, and is kind of just feeling it with a little bit of sadness. There's a moment where she just, not mirroring Hildegard and what they did, but looking at his face, she has a moment where she's just thinking, what did he do wrong? If there was something that was wrong, or was he just caught in this massive situation? For the first time, she's able to look at one of these creatures, and there's a moment of realization of, this is so complicated. Maybe this wasn't an enemy at all, and just takes that moment for a second. Then kind of like shakes her head, steps away, and is like, okay, we've seen creatures like this before. Do you remember not the fairy cabin, but the real cabin with the children? Something is absolutely focused on replacing people as well as our ticking clock. We need to look into how this connects to the Fairy King, because it looks like this guy was crucified, and I can only imagine that's more of a church doing than a fellow Vason. Just a hunch.
Hildegard gets very red behind the ears, black skin kind of turning almost burgundy. You can tell she's like trying to hold back that rage. And through almost gritted teeth, they say, "These people think anything that is not like them is unnatural. That is the sin. This person was doing nothing wrong, just living his life. They say this is the husband of someone who went missing, which means he had great love in his life. He had capacity for love. So what is this? You drive a spike through them for that? For being different? No, I have never believed in the church. This has not made me any bigger of a fan."
Steve nods just silently and kind of just looks away.
I think Hildegard starts to talk to Steve about who it could have been. Well, it can't have been another fae because the spike is iron, so they wouldn't have been able to use that. It had to be somebody who's mortal. And because of the crucifixion of it and dying for someone's sins, like that symbolism, like that definitely feels like the church, things like that.
All right, let's jump over to Greta and Elizabeth. You were going to talk to Linnea. You make it to the asylum and the front door is locked.
Elizabeth will go up and rap on the door, see if anyone answers.
No one comes to the front door.
That's very odd.
That's eye concerning. We know Linnea's by a window. Do we know exactly maybe where that window is?
I'm going to say yes.
Let's go. And Elizabeth is going to scoot.
Is it a first floor window, second floor window?
Yeah, most of the buildings here are one story tall. So it's old version of the windows, probably, you know, 5 feet at most off the ground. You go around the side and you come to Linnea's window. There is a bloody handprint on the window. If you look inside, you see that the door is open to the rest of the asylum and there's blood everywhere going out into the hallway.
Do we see Linnea?
You do not see Linnea, no.
Is the Fairy King there?
No.
Damn it. Okay. Oh, this is horrible. Should we go in? I don't know if I want to.
Oh, I don't know if we should go in unarmed.
I true.
This could be Vason. This could be some of the people in the asylum got violent.
Could be. Do you have anything on you?
I just have a flask.
I got a knife. That's about it.
For courage.
Oh, well, that we might need that. We might break that out. Where does one get weapons in the 1800s?
You could get weapons. There probably are weapons at Castle Gillenkreutz. As outsiders buying weapons in the middle of the day from the locals might raise an eyebrow or two.
Yeah, they're already not a fan.
Maybe we tell the police?
Aye, that's a smart choice, probably. Okay, yeah, let's go back to the station then.
We could also say if you wanted to call, because there are local patrollers, you could just call a local patroller and have them open the door if you wanted.
Okay, we can do that, yeah.
Okay.
And flag someone down.
All right, they check out the perimeter, see the handprint, go, yeah, this is not good. And they open up the door, and this smell of fresh blood hits you. It smells like fresh meat. And you look inside, and the officer is shocked. There's blood spray everywhere. There are chunks of people everywhere. And then on the walls, it just says some strange word. It looks like it might be an elven word, but to be clear, it's a Norse elven word, not a fantasy elven word. I just want to be clear. It's marked off in human blood in big letters across. You're not sure what it is. You would have to get some sort of book to look in to figure it out. And the officer says, well, I need to go get backup before we go in here. He leaves real quick. Do you wait for him to come back or do you poke around?
I tell Elizabeth, write down that word, and then I take out my flask, I take a sip, and I offer a sip.
Elizabeth immediately takes it and chugs it back. Ooh, strong stuff. Good stuff. Thank you.
A little liquid courage.
Shall we maybe take a peek. Elizabeth makes sure the doors are propped open, so hopefully they don't close behind us, and then we'll start walking inside.
Okay. As you walk inside, you see several horrors all around. You see a torso that has been skinned and the rib cage has been kind of torn open. You see a skull where the jaw has been removed and the head is just kind of sitting there. It still has skin and stuff on it. Everything in here looks like it died probably within the last 8 hours or so. Everything's starting to dry out and bugs are starting to zoom around a bit. The smell is definitely there. As you go further in, you can start smelling more decay. And in every single room, the doors have been opened up and the people have been slaughtered. The nurses have been slaughtered. You look all around for Linnea. You can't find her. She's not in her room. There's a lot of bodies, so it's very hard to see, but it definitely feels like something that Hildegard would be able to kind of figure out some kind of method of figuring out who was from where. I would like you both to make a fear check.
Yeah, I think that's in order. And we get an extra one for each other being there, yeah.
Yes, you do.
I got 1 6. No, 2 sixes.
I got 1 success.
Okay. I won't say that you're doing okay, but you are definitely not as shaken as, you know, maybe you should be, especially in a mass murder kind of situation. Is there anything that you want to do before the cops come back?
Elizabeth will look around to see if there's any Vaisen in the area.
You both look around really well for Vaisen. You half expect to see something there. The only thing you come up with is one large, bloody footprint.
How large?
Looks like probably somebody that's maybe 8 feet tall, maybe 9. Barely could get through the door, because this is a hospital, the asylum that's got the archways. It's got a larger roof than most, and it came in and started attacking people. So probably, like I said, 8 feet tall, large.
And it's still about morning for us. This happened at night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, 6 to 12 hours ago, probably more like 6, somewhere in that time. It's hard without the forensics to do.
Gotcha.
Why don't you all give me a investigation and logic roll? Which doesn't really give Elizabeth much, but you at least get your logic, your 3 logic there.
True, but I rolled no successes.
I rolled 1 success.
Yay.
All right, so then, yeah, I mean, you guys would have gotten there already, but definitely looks like a troll. It looks like it happened really fast. It tore through here, both literally and figuratively.
Can we tell by the footprints or by anything, was it heading for Linnea's door first, or was it just random?
It was heading for her.
Mm.
And it looked like it drug someone out of there, because there's a lot of blood. But like I said, her corpse isn't there.
So she may still be alive. This may have been a kidnapping as well as a massacre.
I think maybe if there's some sort of trail we can follow, going outside, because you can see, saw the drag marks there. Maybe there's some sort of a trail or something we could follow.
Okay. As you're coming out, there is a group of locals from the nearby market who are following with the 5 police that are coming back to check everything out. And one of them stops and goes, "Is anyone alive in there?"
Not that we could see.
Do you know how many people were living in there? 25 people lived in there. None of this stuff happened before you all started showing up. What are you doing in that castle?
Trying to figure out exactly what's happening as well.
And the cops go, "Look, settle down." But you can tell the looks on the locals' faces that they're not buying what you're selling. I would like you guys to give me a observation roll. The police will keep the locals in line for right now, but you can tell they're not happy and looking for someone to blame.
That is 1 success.
Excellent. The trail starts to trail off as you're following it, and it goes straight into the woods. And when you get to the edge of the woods, you see this darkness that permeates the area. And it almost feels like the trees separate from each other just a little bit. Almost like it's inviting you in.
I don't know about going in there by ourselves. We might want Hildegard and Sieve with us.
It's true that we might want them. But Elizabeth turns to Greta and says, we know that we're going to perish if we don't do anything within, a few months, a year. Some November, 1888, next year, is when we're going to die. They need to kill us all at once. So maybe if it's just us two, we'll be okay?
Are you saying the rider is relying on plot armor? Okay.
Yeah. I get that.
The rider is relying on plot armor.
Yeah.
It's perfectly sensible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I wrote a book like this once.
You're Agatha Christie in it.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I guess you're right. I take her hand. Okay, let's go.
Okay. Just let's not let go. Okay, if we run, we run together. And as they walk together towards the woods, Elizabeth will take their small knife, kind of put it up their sleeve, just in case to get quick access to it.
Okay. You walk into the woods, and just as the trees let you in, the trees close up behind you. And it feels very much like the dream that you were in originally. You walk down this path, and there is a cave at the end of the path, littered with bones outside of it. What do you want to do?
Do the bones look human?
They do.
It's daytime.
But the forest is pretty dark.
Yeah. Well, and in a cave, a troll would be protected from the sun.
Oh, before we go in, I've never climbed, I climbed trees when I was young. Maybe we can rip out some of the foliage above and create like a little safety, like solar beam. That way when we run out.
You're going to cut down the trees with your knife?
Just
like go up high enough.
Got some leaves.
It's all pine trees, by the way, just so we know.
Carnivorous trees.
I don't want to go in there blind, but is there anything else around us besides that cave?
It's mainly dense forest, but you can tell where Uppsala is. You know, it's not like you stepped into a completely magical fey land. It is still the forest. It just obviously has a lot of troll magic around it. So you know where the city is. You know how to get away from the cave, but it's a lot of trees. So you'd have to go exploring to see if you found something else.
Well, I grabbed the biggest stick I can find to possibly use for defense. And then I guess we head in.
Should we see if, like, if we throw something, maybe we can trot out? We hide?
We could try.
Okay.
Elizabeth's going to grab like a bone or something from the ground near the entrance and try to find somewhere for us to duck down afterwards and then throw the bone into, hopefully, away into the woods to make noise.
Okay. So you make this noise and a few moments later, this 8-foot tall, probably 900-pound troll comes out, and it's got on a really dirty, really old, really ill-fitting loincloth, and that's about it. That's all it has on. And it has a club in its hand. Its face is caked in dirt, and it's looking around. Now, in all honesty, just so I know, did either of you get baptized? Do you think you were baptized when you were young?
Maybe.
You picked the accent. Are you one of them Protestants or no?
I feel like she is. Yeah. I don't think she was baptized.
Okay. I'm not going to force you. If you weren't baptized, then we'll say you weren't baptized. Do you want to do like a 50-50 roll and see?
Yeah. Let's do a 50-50. That'll be
good. You guys can do that.
I think I'll do the same thing. So what? Low is bad. Low is bad.
So yeah, Lo is baptized?
Lo is probably baptized.
Okay. 5.
I got a 1.
No!
Greta's baptized.
No, Greta, why?
I had no choice. I was a babe. It sits there for a second looking around for this noise. And it starts to sniff in the air. And it turns towards where you're hiding. and it starts running and yelling at the same time. And that's where we're going to end this episode.
Oh, damn you, Wes.
Oh, hey, no. It's a good cliffhanger.
It is. Oh, God. It's a bad
idea. I am
idea.
So glad you guys went into the darkness.
I'm so happy.
Very excited.
Yes.
You know what lies in the darkness?
Plot.
Yeah, yes. Have to go
in. Thank you all so much for playing. I look forward to what happens next. We have so much going on in this show. Let's see where all of these wonderful people are. Candace?
Hi, everyone. I've been Candace the Magnificent. You can find me at the Candace Marie on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Candace the Magnificent everywhere else. You can find me every other Saturday on What We Do in the Shallows, an original horror 5e queer pirate campaign, as well as in several other places on the internet. So check out my socials if you want to know more.
Hello, I am Saint or Saint Spider, and you can find me probably more readily in the 12-Sided Stories Discord. Also, I have a vestige of a Twitter account at Saint Spider TV, which kind of I check every once in a while, but I'd say look for me primarily in the 12-Sided Stories archive, and where you can find just so many amazing campaigns. Thank you.
Hello, I've been Piper, as I've always been. You can find me at my Twitter at Maddie Matehee. That's MattyMateehee. Or on my Twitch at Matehee, where every other Saturday, Candace and I play a game called What We Do in the Shallows. It is a gay, queer pirate adventure. Very fun, very romantic, very lovely, very scary. So if you would like to see me there, you definitely can. Or you can also catch me in the 12-Sided Stories Discord as well. It's the place that everyone's who's cool is. So if you're not there, well, I'm sorry to say.
Hey, I'm Michelle, and you can find me on the socials and in the 12-Sided Stories Discord as at Michulhu. That's M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U. You can find my music and Wes's amazing sound effects if you go to DriveThruRPG and search for Plate Mail Games.
And I am Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on all of the different socials. You can find the show at 12-Sided Stories, the number 12, and then Sided Stories on all of the different socials. Join our Discord because it is popular and fun. And 12 out of 10 doctors agree that it's good for your health. Also, you know, if you want to help us out, join our Patreon, give us a shout out on your favorite social media, or give us a review on your favorite platform. And we'll be back with more. We'll see if, you know, Greta and Hildegard end up in Troll Stew. That's going to be interesting. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.